This is Cast of Wonders, the young adult fiction podcast featuring stories of the fantastic. Episode 277 for October 29th, 2017. You're listening to Little Wonders, our thematic flash fiction collections, and this year's Halloween collection features Monster Mayhem. Our first story is Brothers in Stitches by Dansel Cherry, a Cast of Wonders original. Dansel Cherry teaches Pilates and raises her daughter by day. By night and nap time, she writes. Her baking hours follow no rhyme or reason. Her short stories have appeared in Fireside, Intergalactic Medicine Show, Galaxy's Edge, and other magazines and anthologies, including here at Cast of Wonders. Her Twitter account and website will be in the show notes. Your narrator is our very own Easter werewolf, Dave Thompson. He's a pretty awesome guy, even if he disparages pumpkin beer. He lives outside Los Angeles with his wife and three children. Together with co-editor Anna Schwind, he ran Podcastle for 5 amazing years, stepping down to focus on his own writing in 2015. You can find 2 of his audiobook narrations on Amazon, Norse Code by Greg Van Eekhout and Briar Patch by Tim Pratt. Dave is an escape artist's world walker and storyteller, having been published in and narrated for all 4 EA podcasts. And now we've a tale to tell.
Brothers in Stitches by Dansel Cherry. I'm sorry to say Master lay charred and inert on the laboratory floor for a good quarter hour before I noticed he was dead. I regret pulling the wrong lever, resulting in an overflow of electricity from the storm, the brunt of which Master received, resulting in his death and a ruined experiment. I'm even sorrier to admit I then ate all his internal organs before I remembered to offer any to Harry, the moaning subject chained to the metal chair in the middle of the room, or to the rest of my brothers in stitches in the downstairs dungeon.
"Not your fault, Legs," Speck said with his mouth full.
All 6 of us were gathered around the newly deceased, paying our respects the best way we knew how.
"Master gave you poor impulse control when he added that tiger brain in your frontal lobe.
And you've earned an extra nibble. No one could drag their 7-limbed ass around to do Master's bidding faster than you," Squint said.
"Besides, Master was an ass," Harry said. Everyone gasped mid-bite. I chuckled nervously and excused Harry for his audacity. Master clearly wouldn't be springing up to defend himself, and anyway, Harry was the newest brother. He'd also been the intended subject of today's experiment, intracorporeal wolf blood tissue perfusion, and we were all poor sports on experiment days. Once we'd had our fill, we settled down on the lab floor to pick the sinewy bits from our teeth and discuss what came next. I, who held the record for fewest beatings in a week, led the discussion. "What do we do now?" No one spoke right away. We weren't used to making decisions.
"Might be fun to terrorize the village," Grunt said, flexing his newly installed metal claws.
Harry laughed nervously and stroked his luxurious arm hair, only recently regrown.
"I don't know. That time I ran away, I got lost and the villagers found me. I don't fancy their pitchforks and torches."
"We could leave through the South Pass and find our families," Speck suggested.
"You can bet your beady eyes I won't be going back," Grunts said to Speck. "My family sold me."
"Would they even take us back?" I asked, gesticulating at my extra bits.
"Look at us, we're..."
"Don't say it," Grunts said, snuffling.
"Grunts, this is important. We are monsters." I raised my voice over the walls. "But what was it that Master always said right before he started working on us? Accept the things to which fate binds you."
"Now, whose arm is this?" I asked, holding up my extra left hand.
It was covered in dark, coarse hair, and of course, Harry raised his remaining hand. "And your eyes," I turned to Speck. He pointed to Squints and Toothy. "You see, we're bound to each other, and in turn we are bound to this castle. Let us accept our inheritance from the master," I said. The fellows muttered their agreements, but poor Grunts was overcome with sniveling and eye-rubbing. He wouldn't calm down until we relocated to the master's chambers and steadied him with 2 full glasses of port from the master's stash in the secret wall compartment.
Could we move out of the dungeons?
Squint asked, stroking the satin sheets on the master's bed.
I've missed pillows.
An idea sparked in my brain, and I was fairly certain it was a good one. What if we each took turns being master and sleeping in his... Everyone stared. Even Squints turned his 2 sightless slits toward me.
Or we could dogpile on, like right now, I said. That's nice, too.
What is left for us here? Squints asked. Besides the feather pillows, of course.
I looked around the room for help. I knew what I wanted, but what did everyone else think?
For starters, I'd like my hand back, Harry said, eyeing my 3rd hand.
And I'm tired of dragging this tail around, Grunt said, holding up the limp elephant tail that the master had never quite innervated properly. The other 3 chorused their agreement, which was heartening. I didn't want the cumbersome extra limbs that Master had given me, but I wasn't sure I wanted to give up the tiger bit.
I don't know that we can become exactly as we were before Master brought us here, I said. Master was a very learned man.
But we have his books and notes, Harry said.
It may be years before we're ready for our first experiment, I added.
No one backed down.
Let's vote on it, then. I rubbed my hands together. All in favor of returning extra body parts to their original owners? Or those of us still alive, anyway?
Not all of us had made it through Master's experiment days, after all. Everyone raised a limb, except Speck, who was trying very hard to not look at anyone, particularly Squints and Toothy. I cleared my throat. When that produced no reaction, I growled, low and deep.
Oh, fine, then.
Speck mournfully stroked the eyelids of his 6 extra eyes, as though we were losing them tonight. With full bellies, we snuggled in our new pillows and dreamt of our future with a fervor never before allowed. Except me. I lay in the dark, with Grunt's arm draped over my chest, and mused while I picked my teeth using the master styloid process, a most useful bone. As evidenced by my own surplus of limbs, however, I knew Master didn't exactly espouse practicality. He didn't approve of his subjects thinking too much, either. So what would the Master have thought of our decision? Would he rather we remained monsters and let his knowledge rot in the storage rooms of a musty, abandoned castle? Or would he see us as worthy inheritors to a strange but wondrous legacy?
Snort, said Grunt's nose, followed by a high-pitched, "Free!"
Good point, Grunt, I whispered, and fluffed my pillow before slipping into my dreams, regret-free.
Danzel told us this short story began from a Flash Fiction Contest writing prompt. Write about a place where the borders or edges are changing. Very quickly in the process, the story expanded past our endearing and slightly hungry characters gaining the freedom to move freely about the castle, and perhaps even beyond, but also the shifting bodily and psychological boundaries they now have the freedom to explore. Danzel, like us, wishes them the best of luck. The same goes for our next set of protagonists in Got Cookies? By Greg Chamberlain. Greg Chamberlain lives in rural eastern Ontario near the Canadian capital of Ottawa. He and his missus, Anne, share their home with a clowder of cats who allow the humans to believe that they are in charge. He's been a wordsmith for more than 4 decades, most of that time spent as a full-time community newspaper reporter in Ontario and British Columbia, his original home province. He looks forward to retiring soon to the Maritimes, where he can continue writing speculative fiction and zombie filk, which includes recent works for Weird Book Magazine and for the Bard Song Volume 1 anthology from Sinister Grin Press. The story is a full cast audio production featuring the one and only Cheyenne Wright. Cheyenne is a freelance illustrator and concept artist. He's the color artist on the 3-time Hugo Award-winning steampunk graphic novel series Girl Genius, and co-creator of many other fine works, including 50 Fathoms and the Emmy Award-winning Deadlands Noir for the Savage Worlds RPG, where you may recognize a character or two. He's also produced graphics for Star Trek Online, the Champions MMO, and t-shirt designs for TV's Alton Brown, my patron saint. Cheyenne lives in Seattle with his wife, their daughter, and an ever-growing stack of unpainted miniatures. In his spare time, he's teaching himself animation and narrates short stories for a variety of venues where he's known as podcasting's Mr. Buttery Man Voice, and is also an escape artist's storyteller. The story also features your Cast of Wonders editorial crew, myself, Danny Daly, and Catherine Inskip.
It was a dark and stormy night. It really was. Black thunderclouds gathered together, turning the early evening twilight sky dark as midnight. There was one brief, bright flash of lightning. Then came the rain, drumming loud on the roof and waking the Baron Esterhazy an hour before the vampire was accustomed to rise. The Baron pulled back heavy velvet drapes and looked out one of the second-floor windows of his mansion. Wind-driven rain ran down in sheets against the window pane.
"Tch!" he tisked.
"Not a fit night out even for a werewolf. Feh! Warmed over plasma tonight, then. Bah!"
Just then, bing-bong, came the faint chime of the doorbell, followed right after, bam-bam, by the loud banging of a heavy door knocker.
"Now who?"
Letting the draperies fall closed, a puzzled Baron Esterhazy descended a wide, shadowy stairway, down to the foyer. The ancient hinges on an age-blackened oaken door squealed loud and long and low as the heavy portal swung open onto the outer porch. The vampire's eyes blinked against the driving rain as he peered outside and saw nothing.
"Hello, mister. Would you like to buy some cookies?"
Girl Scout. An actual Girl Scout, standing on his porch, rainwater dripping down the hood of a poncho-style slicker, one hand holding up a cellophane-wrapped box. Still confused and now astonished, the Baron's eyes blinked as he peered down to the little curly-haired Muppet.
"I'm sorry, my child. What did you say?"
The Girl Scout sighed, the kind of sigh that came with having to be out door to door in the pouring rain, trying to peddle cookies just to earn a merit badge.
"Would you like to buy some cookies? Please?"
A thoughtful frown stole across the Baron's thin face.
"This is foul weather for anyone or anything to be out and about, especially for a Girl Scout."
The little girl huffed and drew herself up straight and snapped a salute.
"Troop Transylvania 6-5000, neither rain nor gloom of night shall stop us on our assigned mission."
"That's the post office," sneered the Baron.
"We're better than the post office,"
the Girl Scout sneered back. The vampire smiled.
"Attitude."
He loved attitude. It was so savory sweet. He regarded with interest now, the Girl Scout standing dripping on his porch.
her little gumboot-clad feet shifting in seeming nervous trepidation. Perhaps he wouldn't have to settle for warmed-over plasma after all. He stepped back, extending a hand in invitation.
Come inside, child. Out of the cold rain.
The Girl Scout's feet stopped shifting. She shook her head, vigorously, all the while keeping her now wary eyes on the Baron.
Uh-huh. I'm okay right here, mister. You want to buy some cookies or not? Because otherwise, I gotta get going. I still got the Crypt Keepers and the Old Witch's place to visit, and they're a long way to walk.
A slight sneer lifted once more the Baron's lip.
What? Not going to see Dr. Frankenstein as well?
That's Myra's route,
was the annoyed reply.
This is mine. You want some cookies or not?
What kind of cookies do you have?
The vampire inquired, changing tactics. A big sigh shook the dripping poncho.
Vanilla cream, chocolate.
There was a noticeable hesitation in the pause.
And I think maybe I might have one mint chocolate left. Maybe.
Mint chocolate?
The Baron licked his lips. Even a vampire liked mint chocolate cookies, especially for dunking in a goblet filled with warm blood, fresh or reheated. Preferably, he thought, regarding the Girl Scout. Fresh.
How much?
5 euros a box.
The Baron frowned.
5 euros?
A box.
Sigh. Cursed inflation, even for Girl Scout cookies.
Very well. Two boxes. One mint chocolate and the other chocolate, if you please.
The Girl Scout gave the box of cookies in her hands a brief look, then tucked it away under her poncho.
Nobody ever wants vanilla,
she muttered as she fumbled under the poncho, at last pulling around forward a large satchel. The Baron took a step back from the open door.
Perhaps you'd like to step inside, out of the wind and rain.
The little blonde head snapped up, blue eyes narrowed in a suspicion-filled stare.
Yeah, like that's gonna happen. I'm fine right here with my pepper spray.
A hand produced a small vial with a little pink nailed thumb on the spray nozzle from beneath the poncho.
That'll be 10 euros for 2 boxes.
The Baron's lips compressed in a tight-lipped smile. His incisors were starting to ache.
Fine, he snarled. 10 euros. Wait here while I go find some change.
The vampire spun about on a heel and stalked away. Back towards the staircase, he stomped up each step, muttering a curse with every riser ascended about arrogant, annoying, antagonizing, aggravating, argumentative, and awful little moppets and their sinfully sweet, seductive Girl Scout cookies, overpriced, overrated, overhyped, and over there.
Euros, euros,
he muttered, storming into a room that in life had served as the Baron's study. He slammed open the dusty roll-top cover of the desk, raising as he did a choking cloud of dust heavy enough to give even a vampire a coughing fit. Dry eyes itching, nostrils twitching in an almost forgotten need to sneeze. The Baron opened desk drawers one by one, pawing through each of them in a vain search for loose change. He found all kinds of change. Kroners, pfennigs, francs, lira, even a few vintage silver talers, tarnished black with age. But no euros. Questing fingers slid across the yellowed pages of an old Bank of Transylvania checkbook. Maybe the cursed little brat would accept a personal check.
She'd better,
growled the vampire to himself, fangs now extended.
Or it's no more Mr. Nice Baron.
The vampire hastened back to the grand stairway.
I fear, my child, he called down as he ran. I've no heroes available, but if you could take a check,
The Baron felt his ankles catch against something narrow and strong at the top of the stairs, felt himself topple forward, checkbook in one outstretched hand, the other half raised to catch hold of the stair railing. He missed. Thump, 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 the Baron must have hit his head on every second or third step during his long, rolling tumble down the stairs. Crack! He stopped falling down the stairs when his head whacked the very hard, very firm, very solid newel post at the bottom. The Baron lay there on the floor of the foyer, stunned, staring up at the ceiling, and at the sharp point of a stake, coming down to rest on his chest, held in place by two small hands belonging to a Girl Scout? Not the one he'd last seen at the door. This one had short, brown hair. He saw his blonde-haired Girl Scout, and another. She had raven black hair, he noted, raising a large mallet together in their four little arms. The last thing he saw was the mallet swinging down.
There! That ought to pass muster! A smiling Anya pushed a damp blonde curl back from her forehead before turning around the mini digicam in her hands so her two fellow Girl Scouts could see the flip-out view screen. They watched tiny versions of themselves staking the Baron, followed by a close-up of the vampire's body through its rapid decay until only a skull was left behind, grinning, with slightly elongated incisors up at the camera's lens.
That's sure to earn us our Van Helsing badges.
With satisfied smiles, Anya and raven-haired Mira collected and packed away the mallet, while little Terse, her short brown hair bouncing with each step, ran upstairs to unfasten and roll up the tripwire stretched across the top of the staircase. Then, together, Mira and Terse held down the skeleton while Anya detached the skull, stuffed a clove of garlic and a communion wafer between its jaws, and set it to one side. They took a moment for several last photographs at various angles of the scene of the Baron's final rest. The rain had stopped by the time the trio left the Esterhazy mansion. The sky was still dark, but a few stars peeped out now and again through breaks in the cloud cover. One of the girls produced an electric torch from beneath her poncho and snapped it on.
"So, now what do we do?"
asked Terse. Mira looked thoughtful.
"My Uncle Yuri's a veterinarian. I bet I could get some of the tranquilizers he uses to put horses and bulls to sleep."
Terse's eyes grew wide.
"Oh, and my dad's a butcher. Lots of meat scraps and blood. We could mix it all into balls with some peanut butter."
"You know," Anya said slowly, "my Aunt Elvitsa works at a jewelry store. Lots of silver necklace chains there." The three little Girl Scouts looked at each other. Then they all smiled, tipped back their heads, and howled in chorus at the moon as it broke through the clouds. Greg told us more than a few of his short story ideas come to him while he sleeps, and that these dream tales remain with him when he wakes up and refuse to leave him alone until written down. He's loved that "It Was a Dark and Stormy Night" line since he first read it in Charles Schulz's Peanuts comic strip, every time Snoopy went through his great unpublished writer phase. Even though it's always offered up as an example of really bad prose, somehow this line continues to intrigue and inspire many authors into figuring out ways to make it work. And this was his twist on it. One of my favorites is a piece of filk music, which just shows you how the line gets around. Join us next week for a bit more of Halloween with...
"Sometimes I think they're ashamed of me, of how I look. Why else would they want to hide me so? At Halloween, everyone is allowed to look like anything they want. So why not me? Why not go outside and feel the sun on my rocky skin and let it heat up, even in the chill October air? Everyone will think it's a costume, a mask, and it will be okay. I come up with a backstory. I'm Stony Girl, the strongest superhero. When the other kids say they've never heard of her, I'll just act superior, like they don't read the latest comics. She's got a blue and a green outfit with a blue insignia, because those are my favourite colours. But the other kids won't need to know that.
Cast of Wonders relies on your donations to pay our authors and narrators and to bring you the best in young adult audio fiction week after week. If you've enjoyed this story, please consider making a donation. There are lots of ways you can support us. We're on Patreon, and there are buttons for PayPal donations on our website. Every single donation, whether a one-off or a monthly subscription, makes a huge difference, and you have, as always, our heartfelt thanks. You can share the love for this story by leaving both it and us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our episodes are designed with your commute in mind, so please share them with your family and friends. You can also join the discussion on the EA forum, forum.escapeartists.net. And we're at Cast of Wonders on Twitter. Come say hello. Cast of Wonders is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and is brought to you by the creative team of assistant editors Danny Daly and Catherine Inskip, associate editors Amy Brennan, Alexis Goebel, Andrew Kim, Aiken Patel, Susie Rodriguez, Muddy Schleider, Chris Tang, and Xander Simon. Our audio producer is Jeremy Carter, and I remain, as always, your humble editor and host, Marguerite Kenner. Our episodes are released under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. That means you can share it, download it, and listen on any device you like, but you can't change it or sell it. Our theme, Appeal to Heavens, is by Alexei Nov, available at Promo DJ or his Facebook page, which you can find in our show notes. Thanks for listening.